everybody a chance to get in and out of the courtroom. And you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Bryn Holston Poole on behalf of appellant Keith Dragon. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. This is an appeal from a workers' compensation case concerning late payment of settlement funds pursuant to a 48-139-3 release of liability and waiting time penalties and attorney's fees associated with the same. As a quick breakdown for the court, since this is a rather specialized area, a 48-139-3 settlement is an alternative to a lump sum settlement. It was established by the legislature in 2009 and essentially allows for a more streamlined process for settlement. It is an appropriate form of settlement when an employee is represented by counsel. There are no Medicare issues. There's no bills that are going to remain unpaid related to the injury. And most importantly, the settlement itself, given those protections, does not have to be approved by the court. It is filed with the work comp court, but it does not have to be approved. Initially, when it was adopted in 2009, it did not provide any remedies for late payment of penalties. That was all parsed out in the Holdsworth case, in which the settlement benefits were not paid within 30 days, and the trial court said, well, we think the same standard should apply as a lump sum settlement, and so we will give you a waiting time penalty for payment after 30 days. The Supreme Court on appeal said you didn't write that into this statute when you created it in 2009, so there is no provision for penalties. However, in response, the legislature then in 2014 changed 48-139-3 and 4 to allow that an employer shall make payments pursuant to the release of liability within 30 days of when the release is filed with the court. And if those payments are not paid within 30 days, the employer shall owe a 50% penalty. This language is...
Is that the language of the statute?
Yes, that's in 48-139-4, subsection 4, that was added in 2014.
So doesn't the language say 50% shall be added for payments?
Well, yes. In this case, it was a $5,000 settlement, was not paid within 30 days, so a 50% penalty would be $2,500, which is owed in addition to the $5,000. This is a rather small case here, but it's got big implications for everyone else. So
what do you think the shall be added language means? Shall be added to what?
Shall be added to the original amount owing. And that is how it's handled in the formal lump sum settlement provisions also. It doesn't just apply to those provisions. It's under 48-125. If, say, an award, you issue payment late on an award, that shall be added language is found in that subsection as well.
And so is it your position that that language means that the penalty shall be added to the amounts due under the release?
Absolutely. And the language that was added in 2014, it makes subsection 4, there's 4 sentences to it. Now, the court in this situation focused on sentence 1 and on sentence 4. Didn't give much leeway to sentences 2 and 3, which add the 30-day time frame as well as the 50% penalty in there. So it's our position that the court, it was plain error that they did not review the plain language of the statute, and that you could have told the intent of the legislature by just looking at the plain language of the statute as a whole. Now, in this situation...
What did the Workers' Comp Court think was missing?
The Workers' Comp Court held on to the language from Holdsworth, which was the case that prompted the changes in 2014, in which sentence 1 says, upon filing of this release, you waive your rights to have the judge adjudicate the issues. Technically, the language says, on account of the injury, which our position, and another argument here is that
these penalties are not on account of the injury, they're on account of failure to pay. But the court held that once you file that release, you've waived any remedy you have. Now, it's ludicrous to have that type of result, because why would the legislature have allowed penalty provisions if you could never enforce them? Say an insurer does not pay a settlement, and the injured worker is forced to file a motion for payment. All the defendant has to do is issue payment before the motion's held, and then there's no point to having the motion. You don't have any remedy for it. The language about 30 days doesn't matter. The penalty doesn't matter. It just gives no benefit to the language that the legislature clearly put in the statute to protect the injured workers and encourage timely payments of settlements.
If they inferred into the statute the word timely, if we inserted that to say upon making timely payments owed by the employer as set forth in the release, such release shall be a full and complete discharge and further liability, if we infer that the legislature intended that to be the case, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't think you have to infer it, because the legislature says they owe it within 30 days. So I think what would be untimely is 31 days.
Right.
I don't think you have to infer that they meant it. It's there and that it was 30 days.
Okay.
Certainly you could infer that it required timely payment. What's timely in this situation, as set forth by the legislature, is 30 days. You've got a 30-day time frame. That time frame begins upon filing of the release. That's the only triggering language, essentially.
What do we do with the language that says you filed the release, you've waived remedies?
You waive remedies based on the injuries, but I don't believe you waive remedies based on the failure to pay. I think they can be separated. They're not on account of the injuries there. Now, while that was the language in Holdsworth, the statute was since revised and the other sentences were added to combat, essentially, the finding in Holdsworth. And I've cited plenty of the legislative history in my brief. This was supported by defendants, plaintiffs alike, to encourage folks to use this type of settlement. By not doing so, it certainly takes away from the utility of it. Personally, I've had several of these settlements come up since, and I haven't made many friends because I don't hand over the signed settlement documents until they can show me the check, and insurers do not like to give a check without a signed settlement document. So I've had to have some high noon meetings at the courthouse where they hand me the check and then I'll sign it. It's simply there's plenty of insurers who will not draft up the check until they see the signed documents, because based on the statute they say, well, why would I give them the check when we have to file the document?
Is this a little bit like the dissent in Holdsworth?
It's very similar to what the dissent was anticipating in Holdsworth.
As a mechanism in the absence of statute.
Correct. And in response, that's where the legislative changes came in 2014. So the dissent in Holdsworth was...
Our question, or our ultimate problem is, did the legislature do it right?
You know, I would say that if you read it as a whole, you can get to what the legislature was going for, and you can't just pick one sentence or another to use. You have to read the whole sentence and look at what the intent behind the statute was. You don't even have to look at the legislative discussion to know what the intent was. Why would the legislature have added a provision for penalties and late payments within the language itself if that was not its intent to allow for that?
To the extent there may be pending legislation, to what degree should that enter into our decision?
I am aware that I may have spurred some legislation here, however, that I have to advocate for my client in this case, and I still hold that the statute as it's currently written, read as a whole, provides for the relief for my client. Could there be...
Depending on legislation.
Could the legislation be more crystal clear? Yes. And it's upon the court to suggest changes, the bodies of the government work together that in that function. However, I think as the statute is currently, it still favors my client getting this penalty for late payment.
Do you think the pending legislation in LB 953 is inconsistent in any respect with the positions that you're advocating today?
I do not. I think it simply changes some wording to make it more crystal clear. It was clear before, a little clearer afterwards. However, I think the intent was still there.
So with respect to the date on which the release becomes operative or effective, is that being changed under the proposed language?
No, it is not. It remains the same that it's upon the date that the release is filed. Now, it essentially what the new legislation says is that it's final once an order of dismissal is entered. In this case, I'd point out that dissimilar to Holdsworth, we did not file a joint stipulation to dismiss saying that our case was ready to be dismissed because we were awaiting the settlement funds to do so.
Before you sit down, what if any impact do the workers' compensation court rules have on our analysis of the interpretation of 48-139?
As far as
the procedure, the release settlement procedure.
The rules itself, I think, are pretty clear that you, in a release of liability situation, it has to be signed by the employee and their counsel. The release is then filed with the court by the defendant, and that's when the triggering mechanism is. I don't think the rules change the statute.
Isn't there some sort of receipt of payment required to be filed?
Not necessarily. I mean, you can't file a motion for penalties, it's my position, until you can show you didn't receive it on time. You can't show you didn't receive it on time until you actually receive it. So that's where that argument would come in. But I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you very much. And you are Mr.?
I'm Mr. Dave Costello, Your Honor. I have taken over the files of Mr. Middleton.
And how do you spell your last name?
C-A-S-T-E-L-L-O.
Good morning to you, Mr. Costello.
Good morning, Justices, Counsel. May it please the Court. Counsel and I have a totally different view of what's going on with the statute. I agree with everything Judge Friedrich said except one thing when he said there's a problem with the way the statute is written. I don't think there's a problem. I don't think you need to go to the intent. I don't think you need to go to the history and the arguments. The operative part of his order reads, when he says in paragraph 4, it reads, upon making payment owed by the employer as set forth in the release, such a release shall be a full and complete discharge from liability for the employer on account of the injury. I disagree with a number of things counsel said. Number one, if you have the 30 days, I think it's found in the statute, you have the 30 days as run. Now at the 30-day part, 31 days, the 50% penalty could be effectuated, shall be, however it wants to word it. At that point, that's when, and I've been on the other side of this, you file a motion immediately. You file a motion the next day for the penalty. Now, I disagree that then, after filing that motion, the other side, the employer can come in and pay the check and then stop everything under this language. Once that motion's filed, just like when there's an appeal filed, the motion's going to be heard. The judge is going to hear that motion. What could they have done to be consistent with the statute and still get their penalty on the 31st day? They could file the motion at the hearing, not wait 7 days for whatever reason to receive the payment. I think if we want to infer and read into where it says upon making payment owed, it doesn't just mean that I send her the check. I think that basically is an accord and satisfaction upon making payment. Payment isn't made until you receive it and accept it. My position is she can't wait 7 days after the time limit is run, receive the check that's been made, accept it, say, we have this now, we're going to cash for it, now I'm going to go get the penalties. It's the burden on them at the 31st day to file a motion. Put it on the calendar, file the motion. Everything's frozen in, you get your 50% because payment can't be made.
Is that in the rules or the statutes?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I believe when it says, upon making payment owed by the employer as set forth in the release, such a release shall be full and complete discharge. I think the upon making payment would mean the acceptance of a payment. We all know, and certainly Your Honors have seen many more cases than I have, where there's been a payment tendered, perhaps maybe in a past due instance to a creditor. Payments tendered, the person writes out the check, sends the check in, but they didn't really make the payment yet. Because a lot of times, Ford Motor Company, whatever, will say, no, that's not enough. You didn't include the interest. You didn't include these other things, and they send the check back. It isn't done just because the check is written and sent in. It takes a little more work on the part of the employee's attorney, but not really. On the 31st day, you file the motion. It's a formal, you file it. Now you've got it frozen in time. You go in. Judge Frederick says, well, the motion was filed. It wasn't made. Payment wasn't made because you didn't accept it. They may have the check. They may have written the check out and even sent it to you. But according to the statute, then, we can apply the 50%. I don't think it's fair to say that the statute allows them to wait 7 days after the 30 days and then take the money, accept it, and then say, boy, we can get the penalty, especially when it says when payment's made.
So under your rule, then, if you don't file a motion on the 31st day, you've waived your right to the penalty?
Not unless the payment is issued and you accept the payment. Say we never did that. Say we never sent the check to them and they never accepted it. Say we sent it under my interpretation, and I think it's the way the legislature meant, if we're talking about intent. Say I send the check, but you say no. You send it back with a letter, it's happened to me. We don't accept this because it's past the 31 days and I'm filing a motion.
I'm not sure I'm following you. You're just suggesting the other side could manufacture delay in order to get late payments.
No, not if it's past the 30 days. They have a right to file that motion past the 30 days. But if they're a few days late, or if they're out of town, or if they're in a trial for a week, I think they'd have a right then to come back, look at their file, say, well, the check was past the 30 days. I'm not accepting that tender, and I'm going to file a motion. I've received letters like that from opposing counsel before. Well, we're not accepting your money.
You're saying the workers' counsel could wait for whatever period of time, as long as they haven't actually received and cashed the check, they still could file a motion for the penalty.
I wouldn't say it was an infinite amount of time. What that would be would have to be adjudicated, I think, if they waited.
But under your interpretation, isn't it payment? It's, in this case, you're urging that their acceptance of the payment
is part of the payment.
Stopped any opportunity to seek a penalty.
Correct, because that there's nothing more to be done. It's the payment.
So if they didn't do it on the 31st day, they waited till one day before your check arrived, they'd be in the same position that you urge on the 31st day.
And in this case, if they waited to day 6 and the check arrived on day 7, on day 6 if they filed the motion.
Right.
Then
so they can file it any time during that interim.
Yes. I would posit realistically, if they waited 6-7 months for no reason, the judge is not going to grant that motion for the penalty.
So, counsel, is it making the payment or accepting the payment that you think makes the release, the statutory release, operative?
I would argue that it has to be both because...
Well, they occur at different times.
Right.
So...
You have to accept that payment. I think that we send it to them, they don't accept it, they send it back with a letter and a motion saying, yeah, we made this payment because we haven't accepted it, here's our motion, we want penalties. Then yes, the judge would say, that's correct, there wasn't the actual payment. As in the case of, I send a check to Ford Motor and they send it back, it's not done. The payment isn't
So then you think it's the acceptance. The acceptance is the thing we should be looking at. The acceptance of payment.
I think both. I think the acceptance effectuates the payment.
Would you suggest that even if there's a series of things you like, it's the last thing that cinches it?
The
last event, like making the payment?
I think that you can't just make the payment. I think there has to be an acceptance of the payment. It would have to be in the sense of a court of satisfaction. I think that's what the statute says. I think that's why there isn't a contradiction. And I think that's what they meant when they wrote it. They could write it better.
Let me try to articulate what I think I'm hearing you say, and that is the words making payment includes both the concept of tender and the concept of acceptance. And without both, making payment hasn't occurred.
That would be my interpretation why there is no conflict and why you can't then go after, can't accept the money and then go after the penalties. It's like a statute of limitations. It may run at the two-year point, and it says clearly it runs at the two-year point, but I have to come in front of judges and say, Your Honors, here's my motion. It ran, and they have to decide. Judge Frederick would have to decide. It's not an automatic, you get it, has to be sent in. That's what the courts are for.
There is pending legislation, we understand. If that were to pass, is that procedural in nature, and would it apply to this appeal?
I don't think it needs to, but it's possible, arguing that it's procedural, it's possible that it would. All this occurred before the passing of that,
well,
if it passes.
You're familiar, no doubt, with the law that procedural changes apply retroactively to cases.
Correct.
That are not finished, and this
Correct.
One isn't finished until we decide.
Correct. That's absolutely true.
Again,
my argument is that the statute is clear as written. I'm not going to debate with the legislature or justices about what they're doing there.
So can you help me understand something sort of procedurally? Under the statutory language, it's the filing of the release that starts that 30-day clock. Correct?
Correct.
And in this case, the employer's counsel filed the release with the court. Is that correct?
Correct.
So was fully aware of the clock starting. What impact, if any, does that have?
I don't know that it does have a large impact. Both sides know. Both sides are a party to the release. They know these operative timelines. In this case, there were some liens and some checks and how was the checks. That's why it was late, is because which lien, how the Colorado lien applied. How
but much the employer money. Knew that if the employer was concerned about the child support lien, the employer knew about those things on the date that the release was filed, correct?
Correct.
Why file the release and start the clock?
Why the release was filed to start the clock?
Yes.
I couldn't tell you why they filed it to start the clock. I think they just filed it as a matter of course and practice, common practice. I don't know that they're looking at the deadlines and the dates so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is State v. Kelly A. Vaness.